Hey everybody, really excited about a new podcast I'm doing. So before you check out this one, and thank you for being a subscriber here, please check out my new show, Props and Drops, with the co-founder of DraftKings, Matt Kalish. We'll be talking a ton about alternative investing and quite a bit about sports, betting, and in the alt investing world, sports cards, sneakers, clearly NFTs. Gonna be a little more fun, a little bit more culture, day-to-day humor. I think you're gonna really like the first episode if you haven't checked it out. The link to the new show, Props and Drops, is in the description of this podcast. Please check it out. Would mean the world to me if you gave it a spin and hit me up on Twitter and told me what you thought.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm incredibly well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Absolutely amazing to have you with us. I'm super excited. I'll let you get started.
Awesome. Well, everybody, first and foremost, I really want to do as much Q&A as possible because I think the details matter. So I'll pontificate here a little bit, create some observations that I'm seeing in the universe. But what I really want to focus on is the Q&A. So please submit them. You know, really at the end of the day, what I've been spending a lot of time on is self-awareness, observations, leaning into things that are obvious to you, around you. What I mean by that is, as I understood the profile of the individuals on the other side of this, when you're in a kind of B2B2C environment, there's a lot that goes into that. You know, I live in that world actually actively myself with VaynerMedia. For all the Gary V content out there, I operate a daily business that has 1,500 people globally around the world that is servicing clients. And for a lot of you, you're building applications on, you know, and front-facing web realities. For us, a lot of it is content and media and creative, all for everyone involved to create a result, whether that is a donation or more likely a sale. B2B2C is a very intriguing game because you've got to find the balance between delivering what you believe while having a human on the other side that is making decisions for their business as you being a provider. And then finally, there's the consumer at the end. I was giving a lot of thought to this talk and also knowing that you had some pretty big icons chatting here like Seth. I said, what do I want to narrow in on that might provide value, that might be a compliment to everybody else who's speaking? And so one thing that I've observed over the last several years, and me and the organization here talked a lot about, you know, positioning this as adapt or die, and really what that really just stands for, in my perspective, when they brought to the forefront, is the reality of adjusting to the reality of the consumer, which is really, at the end of the day, over the last 20 plus years, something that I spend the majority of my time thinking about. You know, I think about why it comes so natural to me to deploy, really at the end of the day, humility. The humility of, like, regardless of what I would like it to be, regardless of what has happened yesterday, the concept of you're only as good as your last at bat is very real to me. The consumer behavior shifts are very real on a daily basis, on a yearly basis, on a decade basis. You start adding elements like what we've just all gone through. It changes patterns, it changes consumptions, it changes perspectives. And so a couple things that I really wanted to focus on. Number one, in the very micro of what I know most of this audience does for a living, I believe the single biggest thing that one can be is religious about the current behavior of the consumer. Let me explain what I mean by that. Your capacity to understand how people are navigating from a UI UX standpoint on a website, on a mobile device, what is the actual consumer behavior at this moment, both in the easy part, math, you know, the quant, the data is so supportive in a meeting that you would have with a client, but then also the qual, just understanding behaviors on the consumer side of, like, shifts or leaning into things like your intuition or your pattern recognition of things that the project you just did and seeing that the site is not converting as well as you and your client anticipated, and the question becomes why, even if the traffic is eliminated as the excuse because what's happening on the site is not acting the way that you'd like it to. Obviously, I don't have to explain to this group, the iOS 14 update is going to impact a lot of our clients in the retargeting and things of that nature. So, you know, the reality is that things are always moving. And I think a obsession from this group, an obsession around the actual consumer behavior will always be the greatest leverage. You know, for me, and yes, I'm glad this banner's up. Please get into the specific questions because that's my mindset and mood these days, but want to get into those details. But to me, the thing that has been very fascinating over the last 15, 13 years running Vayner is how many people dig into their religion, to how it was, what they're most comfortable with, over-recommending tactics that they're comfortable because they understand it, even though the consumer has moved on from those tactics. So for me, the biggest passion I had coming into this talk was the ability to make sure as many people as possible, even if it was just one or two, kind of left with the notion of how do I become more blindly consumer centric? And how do I fight for the customer in my B2B conference meeting, in those rooms? In those rooms, how do I fight for the reality of consumer behavior over my selfish wants of what I know how to do over and over blindly in my sleep and it's easier, the client pushing me in a direction that might be against our belief. So one of the things that I helped one of my dev shop friends do several years ago that has been much, maybe even more fruitful for him than I thought, he hired this incredible consumer insights executive that I was very fond of. She worked for me for a little while, moved on, wanted to go to something smaller. And it's been remarkable to me, and it's probably the inspiration for why I start my opening rant with this subject matter, how much that has factored into the growth of their business. At the end of the day, the consumer is so important. You have to clearly have passions. You have to clearly understand what you stand for. You have to have a sense of what you believe, but please have the humility for the consumer. The other thing that I think one really needs to think about is so many people here have won on jumping on the wave of a technology shift, right? You were first to move on websites. You were first to move on SMS. You were first to move on email, whatever it might be. I spoke about it very briefly in the context of what's a consumer doing so that you can provide that service for your customer. But then for your own business, one of the things that I've been also observing quite a bit is the stagnant nature of many providers, many B2B2C executives on their hesitation to adopt new capabilities, adding things to their repertoire, offering more services. This whole innovation doesn't have feelings for any of us thing really, really matters to me. And I'm a very big believer of that. And whether that is what is in the air a little bit right now, we're in extremely early stages and there's a lot of muckery, a lot of bad executions, but you know, very clearly from a development standpoint, Web3 is brewing. And whether it's 1995 or 1999 in the scheme of the internet revolution for Web3, the way websites interact with decentralized servers is something that should be on many people's minds in here, even if you're not looking to provide that service or expand or hire into Web3 development. Just getting what I call the appetizer, or where there's smoke, there's fire. I play a lot in smoke land, have my hands in different things just to get a little sense, And then when it feels like it's ready for prime time, you start to productize it. You know, for me, you start to talk about it, whatever it might be. And so I think a word that has emerged for me quite a bit in self-reflection and as I mature and go through my process, I'm surprised how much curiosity has been a factor in my overall human success, let alone some of my business, successes and excitements. And so I always go into a talk like this with this consumer profile. By the way, that deer is exciting me. That's popping up on the screen. I'm not sure what that is, but I'm very excited about that. Curiosity is incredibly practical, is how I see it in my mind these days. It's that appetizer and smoke thing that I just referenced is something I'd like to challenge or inspire or create the seed of debate for every individual on the other side of the screen of, are you genuinely pushing yourself to learn or to at least taste, or most of all, what has been probably got me there was, I was surprised how many people were dismissive over the last 12, 13 months. It's been a very incredible time, you know, in a weird way, Zooms and things like this have allowed me to scale human interaction, right? The inefficiencies of travel or things of that nature. I've been able to have a lot of interactions during this this period of COVID. And something that struck me both from Fortune 500 land, startup land, VC land, NFT land, just an incredible passion for no or dismissing, which I understand, grounded a lot of insecurities, a lot of other variables that lead to that. But this audience, I think, actually has an incredible vulnerability when I think about B2B2C to not stay curious, because another service provider has the ability to out-innovate and then commoditize what you bring to the table. I'm a very, very big fan of putting myself out of business before somebody else does it for me. And so, you know, I would say we're in a moment of transition of consumer behavior in how they consume the internet. That will continue to flow, whether it's things a decade out or somewhere within a decade, like VR and Oculus, whether it's just the way people behave in mobile. This industry, again, building sites, all of you, can have incredible context to what I'm speaking about when the world really went more mobile native. There were so many dev shops that just didn't move quickly enough to understanding how to design or UI in a mobile environment, and many fell by the wayside. So, you know, just a level of curiosity. You know, if you're in the e-commerce element, if you look at the advancements of what's going on, you know, within social shopping, are you in a place where you can develop social profiles that are more likely to convert than, let's say, on top of WordPress infrastructure? So these are all things that I think need real debate with oneself. But I think the overall arching thing for me is I love these last two decades, and they continue to play out the same way with different nuances. These are substantial shifts in human behavior. The internet, it was substantial. You're about to hear at some point from one of the great thinkers and OGs of early internet behavior. I think I'm right about this. Seth sold one of his companies early on to Yahoo. Like, there was so much going on there, and it was so early, and there was so much that was assumed. Much of it did play out in different timing than a lot of us thought. Much didn't play out. And I think everything is now compounded. There's so much more infrastructure, the railroad tracks, the roads, they're built. And so now we're on to that next phase. And I think for a lot of this group, this next 5 years is going to be defined on how consumer-centric, how curious they were to evolve their products and services. How much were they able to adjust, quote unquote, with the times? I'll spend a few more minutes on one other subject matter, and then we'll get into the Q&A. To make everything that I just said roll from like a strategy and leadership capability, there's another incredible nuance, which is another word I'm incredibly passionate about, is continuity. You know, I think for a lot of you, if you're picking up on what I'm putting down, an incredible thing to really reflect on is how you're leading. So much I've come to realize as well, another fun observation during this incredible opportunity to think, continuity. You know, some of you may know I'm a very big New York Jets fan, and I love that team. And in football, there's something called an offensive line, because I know this is an international crowd and the NFL is not necessarily an international sport, but there's these five gentlemen who protect the quarterback. And the data is remarkably powerful on teams that are able to keep those same five offensive linemen year after year for a period of time. And I think about that quite a bit when I think about organizations. How structured are you as a leader on being obsessed around retention and leaning into the emotional intelligence that is required to manage people individually and reverse engineer their ambitions, whether that is financial or credibility and fame or awareness, challenges? You know, I think that's something that people really need to reflect on, because to be able to have the time and the mental capacity as a business to innovate, you must be in a position where I call innovating and jumping into this hunting, you know, finding, right? You're going out and hunting. If your farming isn't strong back home, you're going to be in trouble. And so I think one little nuance on this framework of really leaning in to the truth of consumer behavior today, and then allowing yourself to innovate your products and services, and then uphold that in the rooms with your clients, it's going to require great farming. And so I ask all the leaders to have a good sense of what their relationships are with the number one, two, three, four people in their organization. How deep does that number go down? Do you have an understanding of what motivates them? And do you believe in the continuity that then will allow you to go hunt while they all farm? And so a couple thoughts this morning, this evening, depending on where you're we're watching this from, but I'm incredibly humbled to be a part of this. I really do think that there is a very interesting turn brewing, and I want to make sure that everyone here is popping their head out of their day-to-day minutia and really understanding what products they should be building on top of this, how should they be thinking about it, and how do they put themselves in a position to succeed. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Gary. That was an incredibly interesting opening for us. I think all web creators know exactly what you're talking about, right? This ever-changing environment, things are moving really quickly in the web, and we have to do our best to keep up, but in the same time, stay innovative, stay curious, and let's move to questions.
Please.
Okay, so our first question is, what content should I be creating on social media as a web designer to stay relevant and set myself apart from the competition?
Currently in the day-to-day place, there's a couple places that, there's two places I'm incredibly passionate about, LinkedIn and TikTok, and here's why. Over the last 15 years, just playing in these spaces, these platforms go through very similar trajectories where you have this early group on them, if it's destined to become a bigger platform, and it's just good old-fashioned supply and demand, a very simple principle. There's more demand on them. There's more people consuming content on them than people are creating from a content standpoint, right? And so what happens is early movers, especially if they're able to provide value, whether that is information, escapism, you know, entertainment is obviously major on these platforms, but there's, I always tell people there's always a place for expertise, understanding of a topic, domain knowledge. And so the reason I like TikTok and LinkedIn for this crew is it's a biz dev portal, right? On TikTok, you have an incredible environment of independent creators who are making a real living at this point through brand deals, through selling merchandise. And as they mature, their website, their web presence really matters. And especially when you get into accessories and merchandising. And so putting out content that is contextually native, which doesn't mean you have to dance and create the web developer jiggle. It's more about putting out content that you actually feel brings value, and then maybe doing some subtle editing within the app. And then obviously on LinkedIn, you know, LinkedIn has been an incredibly interesting one for me. It was for almost a decade a utility, right? It was a place where people really used it for getting jobs, resumes, all that kind of reality we all know, recruiting. Over the last half decade, maybe a little bit more, it has emerged as a meaningful you know, content hub, and there's an incredible amount of consumption on it, and enormous amounts of B2B decision-making happens in it. And again, content creation is about self-awareness. As a matter of fact, this is great to have Seth here today. Seth is one of my favorite people to read. He has an incredible skill set to be able to write and make you consume it and enjoy it. That was not my destiny. You know, I don't have that skill. My comfort zone was more video, you know, and that was a comfort zone for me. What's amazing about LinkedIn is whether it's the written word, whether it's video or an emerging thing that I'm seeing from people is they have the gift of gab. They like to do the talking, but for some unfortunate reason, they have a level of insecurity of being on video, which, you know, comes in many shapes and sizes. And I think that the recording of an audio clip and then posting it in a LinkedIn environment is an opportunity for many, even when you get a random great thought or an observation of things that people should be thinking about. So LinkedIn and TikTok have the organic reach to allow everybody who's watching here who doesn't have any audience that a meaningful piece of content that was destined to get a little awareness becomes a biz dev portal. Those are two places I would focus the most on the supply and demand of attention.
Okay, thanks, Gary. I mean, I do like the idea of a web creator jig, but I hear what you're saying that we don't need to go,
Actually, I'm sorry to interrupt. That's a very important point. I think people are intimidated by TikTok in a lot of ways, which is why I say that. On the flip side, God willing, the web creator jig could ridiculously, that's what's so ridiculous about TikTok. That makes no sense. That wouldn't be my betting horse. And yet, if somebody said to me that was destined to hit, I'd be like, yeah, that's just the way that platform works. And so I think not being in no culture is very important for content creation. And I think that's something everyone here should think about.
Okay, that's definitely a good one. Good piece of advice there. And I really love this question because I think it's something that we talk about a lot at Elementor. Okay, so I'm going to read it out. Client behavior Please. And consumer behavior can be very different. How do you navigate the divide between the two? Brilliant question.
It's a great question, and it completely affirms what I tried to start this talk with, right? This is why I think, you know, I genuinely believe this statement. Whoever's closest to the consumer wins. It's just so darn obvious in many ways. And in our B2B2C realities for all of us, it's also true. It has been, you know, I came into advertising, especially Madison Avenue, with such blind eyes, genuinely knew nothing. And what guided us and gave us an incredible start was we were just blindly consumer-centric. This is what's happening with the customer. This is what's happening with the customer. We also had an appetite and a willingness to not win the client. And so a lot of, you know, obviously as Vayner's gone to where it's gone, I've had a lot of people who've reached out, and I love jamming with people in my own industry trying to help. And I speak to that. And the thing that I'm worried about that question is we love to blame the client. We love it.
Yeah.
But the reality is that bad behavior or that behavior is completely predicated based on the line in the sand that we're all willing to draw, right? And so I highly recommend dying on your own sword. I love when we don't win a pitch when we said the truth because it comes around 3 years later, 5 years later. So this was why I spent a lot of time, you know, I don't know if you can see this. I got a little bit of goosebumps. I'm really happy right now because I really wanted to think like, you know, you don't have a lot of time. You want to bring value. I'm obsessed with that more and more every day. I genuinely believe that every hour this audience spends on trying to truly understand what customers are doing pays unbelievable dividends throughout their organization and ultimately in this exact question, which I think is the elephant in the room for so many, it will give you the conviction and the confidence to draw that line. You'll start to get intoxicated when you're going to lose. Let me give you a news alert because I live it. You're going to lose 8 out of 10 because of it. Because a lot of people on the other side want to go with the easy and the historical. When you win the two, you win them on your terms, you do better work, it feels better, and it builds momentum. And that's what I dream for a lot of people on this call.
Awesome, thanks for that. And we actually have a live question coming in. So I'm gonna activate the video, if I can. It's live, so we're going to carry on with some more questions.
No worries.
I'm going to keep reading. All right, so our next question is, I hear that we do have the live question.
Let's do it.
So I'm excited for this one. So, boom. There it is. Oh. There's the live. Oh my God, we have Seth Godin with us.
What an honor. Seth, how are you?
It's good to see you, man. And I've just been sponging up everything you've been putting down. Thank you. This is one of the great moments of web history right here on the screen. And here we are back again. So you just answered my last question, but the next one I have for you is this. You are really clearly continually living on the frontier and dancing with the future. But you've been at this ever since the wine store in New Jersey. And the question I'm going to ask on behalf of web creators is, what's the one thing, not the next big thing, but the old and still reigning big thing that they don't get yet? Just let us know.
That's a great question. Thank you, Seth. First of all, it's just really good to see you. I hope you're well.
We need to go for a walk soon.
Yeah, I'll text you after this. Thank you so much. It's so nice to see you. That the mix of math and intuition is a very important relationship. I think the thing that is allowed, you know, you don't know what that feels like. And I hope I've made it clear every time we've interacted, my incredible admiration for you. For you to say continue, it means the world to me because I admire you. And I think what the old thing, which is the new thing, it's always the same game, which is there's a level of intuition. There's so much pattern recognition I had. Even by the time I got into liquor store, you know, you say since the wine store, so much of my lemonade, sports card, shoveling snow, as I get older, a little more wiser, you start realizing, oh, wow, even that was the pattern recognition that helped me, you know, with the wine stuff so quickly, which then I built on. It's having the humility and the conviction in balance, the gray and the black and white, the math. Because if it was one or the other, it just, you know, that's what where we see failure. You see too many people using data as a look back, which is why they don't see the next thing, which is why enormous companies fail, right? And then you have other people that are a little bit too off the reservation on, it's all like, they completely don't have, you know, they have these incredible intuitive feelings, but they're not willing to look at truth in their face and take a back step. And so, especially for these web creators, you know, I was very taken aback by, I met so many smart friends who had web shops who just genuinely dismissed this, set. You know, these were my first rodeos. So I hadn't been around smart people who were blindly pushing against something that was so obvious because they either were tired and didn't want to, I have a lot of empathy for it. They were tired and didn't want to learn a new craft. They were making too much money and they didn't want the thing to change. You know, I always tell people, I don't want TikTok to happen. I've got Instagram figured out. I don't want Instagram to happen. I had Twitter figured out. Like, you know, I don't have this great want for these new things to happen. They become work every time. But I know that there's no shot for me to be successful in what I do without it. So I would say the relationship between intuition and math and not over-indexing one or the other, and if it doesn't come natural, one or the other, surrounding yourself with teammates, that is just a tried and true old thing.
Thank you, sir. Keep leading.
Thank you. Thank you, my friend.
We'll talk soon.
Okay. I can't wait. That was a huge treat for us. Gary, I hope you were you're down with the surprise. And Seth,
so down.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you a bit later. Okay, so I'll move on to the next question for you, Gary. Another great one. Done or perfect? Is always done better than perfect? And is always perfect done? The people out there are curious about what you think.
Perfect is an insecurity. Now, in web development, it has to work, right? But I find that people that are in love with perfection are using it as an excuse to not be judged, to procrastinate, to create leverage that they're a perfectionist around the others to give them control. So I'm a big fan of done, big fan.
Okay, I really, really, really love that answer. I feel like you were speaking directly to me, so I'm sure it's resonating with other people as well. Next question. What's the most important post-COVID trend? app, social media, what do you think? What's the most important trend that we're seeing?
The macro trend is eliminating friction, right? You have a lot of people in their 40s to 80s that got accustomed to less friction, right? They know what people, let's say under 40, have natively been comfortable with. And those are arbitrary numbers. I'm 45 and I'm very in this. But like, so I think the trend is eliminating friction. So whether that's last mile delivery, whether that's a million other things, I couldn't push people enough to, in their web development, create experiences that eliminate friction. Like nobody wants a big banner pop-up to sign up for the email, even though it converts well, but how can you do it better? Because it eliminates a little friction. People that can advance things to eliminate friction will be the big winner. So lack of friction is a huge consumer want. It's always been, and it's been accelerated with COVID because people got into convenience realities in their day-to-day.
Okay, love it. Next question. What is the best way to get leads when you have a low budget for marketing? We're really all over today. Loads of different directions for you. Good question.
LinkedIn organic content. I'm telling you, everyone, you will be blown away. You could have no followers. You cannot even have a LinkedIn account. And you can create one, post your first post of three. Let me give you a good one. You're in the mood. You're a good writer. 21 things to think about in 2021 when designing your website. That's what you title it. You write it. You'd be shocked how many leads come from things like that. But you got to stay with it. It's like working out. The first exercise is not going to get it done. Keep chipping away at it.
Okay, I think this is a great follow-up, kind of, because it's this next question says, when you first started VaynerMedia, how did you go about signing up your first clients without a portfolio? From what I understand, they were quite big accounts too.
They were. I had a little bit of an advantage because I did what I'm telling everybody here to do. I was creating Twitter content, a lot of it, and had built up a little bit of a notoriety for being right or being ahead of things. And that led to, you know, Campbell's and Pepsi to consider us, to give us a shot. And so the NHL. So it was my content that led to relationships that led to business. And I believe everybody here can do it too. And LinkedIn and TikTok are incredibly organic places right now. And one needs to be figuring that out.
Okay, great. Next question. Three recommendations to better understand the consumer.
Listen. And let me explain by that. Discords, Reddit, Twitter, Instagram, Explore. Those four places are incredible. Join Discords, join Reddits, use hashtags and look at trending topics, use the Explore page. Spend your time in communities to extract consumer insights. Read and contribute. Join Facebook groups. I think Facebook groups are very sneaky and good. Local ones, subject matter ones, AKA if you're a web developer in Mexico City, join the Mexico City Entrepreneur Facebook group. Subject matters, you know, join small business group. Small businesses always need your work, so that kind of stuff.
Okay, great. This is a good one also, because you have talked to a lot about LinkedIn, Twitter, social media. So where do you see the role of websites in the world of social media?
Oh, they're still incredibly important. I think social media's job a lot of times is to get people to websites. And I think websites carry an incredible amount of weight. I do think with social media, a lot of people use social media sites to do what their website used to do for them. So there has been some fragmentation, but I could never imagine not having websites for anything I'm doing as of right now. And when that becomes a day, then I'll adjust. But I think websites matter tremendously. I see a lot of influencers who have 20, 30, 40 million followers and have a very shitty website or don't even have one. And it baffles me. It's a huge missed opportunity to collect opportunity. And that's why I like TikTok for a lot of people here. I think they could go viral as a web developer on TikTok, which would then lead to people DMing them and asking them to build their websites for them.
Okay, cool. I think coming from someone like you, we're all feeling a bit calmer now that websites are here to stay. So next question, how do you recruit team members?
We're at scale now. We're almost 1,500 people, so there's a lot of word of mouth. We've also built a big reputation. But in the beginning, and this was why I keep pushing everybody here to create content, it's about creating content, because when you do a nice post on LinkedIn that's smart, people are gonna go to your LinkedIn profile, they're gonna click your website, you're gonna have a hiring link on your website, and people are gonna fill out that form. Content is it's the hunter. Your website is the farmer. We need to bring them there. So put out good content on LinkedIn. By the way, jab, 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 right hook, one of my most successful, hooks. Put out content for them. 21 things to think about, 5 good rules, how to navigate iOS 14, just good thinking, the things all of you know. But then maybe the 10th post on LinkedIn is I'm hiring somebody. Hi, everybody, I'm hiring somebody. And boom, it just sends it that way. So, I think about that stuff.
Cool. So this is a great question. We have a 16-year-old watching, and they want some tips for how they start a business.
You just did. What's amazing about it is you don't have to overthink it. You have to decide what you're selling. Are you good at selling it? Meaning, are you good at delivering it? Are you proud of what you're selling? If it's web development, that's amazing. If it's NFT art, that's amazing. And then you've got to go out and build awareness through content. Content is commercials. Commercials built Coca-Cola and McDonald's, and they'll build you too. You just have to be self-aware and put out more content than you think, because those are your at-bats, and that's how I see it.
Okay, cool. So we're in a content space. So the next question is, can you talk about the right blend of entertainment versus educational content?
I think that's very much a person-to-person thing. I think you need to be who you are. So if you're inherently, I think for me, I blend my personality into my information content, which I think is why it works. I think that for a lot of people, they think there's a right answer and there's not. It could be 88-12, it could be 50-50, it could be 12-88. Lean into what you are, because all of it works.
Awesome. So next question, any tips for getting through the hardest part of your business, the grind?
For me, it's hard to answer this question because I enjoy the grind, because I like it. For me, running a business is like playing golf or sailing or rock climbing. For a lot of people, those are their favorite hobbies, and they like the hard part just as much as the accomplishment. That's how I see business. I see it as a hobby. And so for me, I love my process. For everybody who's thinking about this, you gotta ask yourself, how much do you love it? Are you doing it for the money, or are you doing it because you can't help it? You just like it so much. And I think that's where you start figuring out the grind part. I also think just putting things in perspective. I think that people value money too much, value business success too much. I think if you put business in its place and realize that it's important, but not the most important thing in the world, that the health of who you love is, if you can put it into an actual perspective, I think that really helps.
Yep, I'll have to agree with you that perspective is everything. So I guess maybe this one you don't have an answer for, but what was the moment that almost had you quit, and how did you get over that hump?
I've never had that moment. I don't want to make up stories. I just haven't. Which I'm very fortunate. I've had challenges in the micro, what I would maybe micro quitting, right? And I've handled them two ways. Sometimes I've stopped. Sometimes I've shut down companies, divisions, and I don't judge myself. I'm trying the best I can, and sometimes I fail, and I'm okay with that. Other times I just liked it so much that I persevered through those challenging days and found myself on the other side of it feeling very accomplished that I got through it.
Great. How can a freelance designer close high tickets? I'm having problems closing deals. The first calls go incredibly well, but once the price goes out, I'm having trouble closing the deal.
To me, I'm a big fan of more at-bats, right? Focus more on getting more of the meetings. Like, have you had 8 first amazing meetings and then went 0-for-8? Well, then get 52 opening meetings. Humility. I think some people, I like to ebb and flow with my fees, whether that's speaking, VaynerMedia. You know, if you're a little cold and you're not having success, you lower the price. If you start building back up, you raise the price. More first meetings and having humility to lower the price for a period of time when you're in a cold streak.
Okay, great. All right, the next question, Gary, how do you see the future of web? Is no coding going to take down the coding?
I'm not sure. You know, I don't like answering things I don't fully know. I think that I have a tough time believing that no coding is so omni and so at scale that it affects the majority of people that are on here right now. So I do think coding on top of decentralized servers is something a lot of people should be thinking about. I am bullish on Web3. So that's what I'm seeing.
Great. How can I keep my social media content hot and interesting? There's just so much out there.
By not worrying about that. You know, you can't worry about competition in that scenario. The most simple way to win that game is to continue to challenge yourself to be authentically you and show all parts of you. You know, I show that I'm a Jets fan. I talk about liking bone broth. I talk about wine. I talk about many things. And so I think too many people are too limited. Yes, you're a web developer, but you're a million other things. And maybe it is your deep passion of fishing and your knowledge about fishing and your fishing content that actually leads to more web contracts than even your web developer content. And I think too many people don't show enough sides of themselves.
Okay, I think this is probably going to feed into the next question, which is, for a new web design and digital agency, how would you suggest to compete and stand out against companies that have 15 plus years experience and always seem to be one step ahead?
Content on LinkedIn about things you're seeing, put out your best information for free like I do, which attracts intrigue, and then have as many first meetings as possible. And like the freelancer, have the humility to price accordingly to the reality of your situation. I was a very accomplished businessman when I started VaynerMedia, and I was selling my services for nothing. I was getting paid more to give a speech for an hour than I was getting paid to work on an account per month. And I was okay with that because I had the humility and patience to build the company.
Awesome. Those are definitely themes that we hear coming from you a lot, which is great. Consistency, you said it earlier. What are the most common mistakes one can make in a startup? What are ways to avoid them?
Spending more money than you have. I find people very funny with their monies early on. And again, back to consistency. Being fancy. When you're in the beginning as a startup, you need to just get to the next day. And a little more humility around pricing and servicing is required while not compromising what you're about and what you believe in.
Okay. All right, well, we're coming up to time. So I think we have time for one more question, which I'm going to ask now. How do you discover new consumer trends? How do you avoid a sunk cost fallacy?
I just listen. We said it earlier. I spend all my time looking at what the consumers are actually doing on these social platforms, reading. I'm such a loud mouth, but the reality is I'm listening so much more than I'm talking. You just see the videos where I'm talking after all the listening. So just spending a lot more time in these communities and observing people's beliefs. As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people. You know, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness. I'm gonna have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks so much, Gary. Today's amazing five-star review is very generous. It's titled, "Prepare to have your favorite podcast ruined." Wow. Occasionally, I try to listen to another podcast, and I always go back to Gary within minutes. Gary is so user-focused, and there's absolutely zero of the fluff that plagues other podcasts. All killer, no filler. Been listening to Gary every day for 2 years, and I'm not stopping anytime soon. Well, thank you so much for that killer review.